My presentation focuses on using Region 10, sorry? Oh, okay. So my presentation focuses on using Region 10 IPP data to try to look at a way that we could get a sense of our rescreening rates and reinfection rates in a situation where we don't have unique client ID that we can, you know, link visit records from the first positive to the subsequent test. So I think that the background has been sufficiently covered, but women with a history of chlamydia are at elevated risk for subsequent infections as well as for the adverse health outcomes. And most post-treatment infections result from reinfection, where the initial infection has been cleared and the individual is reinfected by either an untreated partner or a new partner. As it's been stated, the time length for rescreening varies. The American Academy of Pediatrics recommends a window of 3 to 6 months. CDC recommends 3 to 12 months. So it varies. We went with the 3 to 12 month time frame in our analysis. And is everybody here familiar with the Infertility Prevention Project? Pretty much? Okay. So it provides chlamydia screening and treatment for low-income women in family planning and STD clinics primarily. Our IPP project in Region 10 has a lab slip that's completed for each client when they have their chlamydia test. And that lab slip includes the patient's reason for visit, which is a patient-reported measure, and they can mark multiple reasons for visit, one of which is rescreening. And it also includes the CT test result on the lab slip once that comes back from the lab. So this is what the lab slip looks like. Zooming in, this is the reason for visit box, and they can mark that they're here for rescreening for chlamydia, as well as other things, and their chlamydia test result gets marked too. So with that in mind, our objective was to try to find a way to estimate the rate of rescreening in this population using those measures on the lab slip, and also to characterize who our rescreening clients are versus the rest of the clients in the clinic with regard to their demographic characteristics and their reproductive health characteristics. And then finally, to look at the chlamydia positivity at rescreening compared to the other visit rates to try to get a sense of our repeat infection rates versus initial infection rates. So I compiled a data set of the IPP family planning and STD visit records for 6 years, from 2003 to 2008, and looked just at the female clients who were under the age of 25 because we do universal screening of that population. And we came up with a way of estimating our annual rescreening prevalence, which we did by dividing the number of rescreening visits by the number of positive test results from other visits. I know that's not a really obvious calculation to do, but the basic rationale for it, and there was a really great presentation yesterday on how much denominators matter in these types of calculations and how different your rates are depending on what denominator you use. But our reason for doing it was basically that your denominator needs to be reflective of population eligible for whatever outcome you're looking at. And if we simply take the percentage of our all total visits that were for rescreening, then we get a really low percentage because the majority of people in the data set never had a prior positive, and so they're not eligible for rescreening. So what we're trying to do by using this subgroup of people with positive test results from any visit other than rescreening visits is to get sort of a proxy group for, you know, how many people could potentially be eligible to be rescreened, and then we're looking at the number that were actually rescreened. So that was the first thing we did, was to estimate the rescreening rates. The second thing was to look at the demographic and reproductive health characteristics for that rescreening group, and then to try to put that in the context of those rates in all of our visits in IPP, as well as that subset reference group of people with positive chlamydia results. And then finally, to look at the percent, we computed the percent that were positive for chlamydia at rescreening visits versus other visits. So again, this is just those three groups that we're comparing. So all the visits are split up into either the rescreening visits or other types of visits, and then we have the test result for each of those visit types. And these boxes in red are showing the three groups that we're referencing. And the assumption that we're making, which we can't necessarily validate, but the assumption is that these rescreening visits are a subset of that population of people who had a positive chlamydia result. So overall, we had about 4,400 tests in family planning over the six-year period, 6,600 of which were rescreening tests. So that's 1.5% of our tests in family planning were for rescreening, and 4.1% in STD were for rescreening. But as we just said, that's not really a good estimate of our rescreening rate, because a lot of those women in the denominator were not eligible to be rescreening because they were negative initially. So this is just showing how we went about calculating that estimated rescreening rate. We divided the number of rescreening visits by the number of positive test results that year. And in family planning, came out with an estimate of about 26%, and in STD, an estimate of about 34%. And this is doing that same calculation on an annual basis, just because that CDC recommendation is a up to 12 months window for rescreening. So we saw fairly consistent rescreening rates using that estimate over the six-year period in both programs. So this is moving on to the second part of the objective, to look at the demographic and reproductive health characteristics of these clients. I know this is a big table, but I've highlighted the ones that I want to focus on. So the right-hand column is the rescreening clients, and all this is showing is just the demographic profile of those clients. So, you know, 54% of them were 20 to 24, and 80% of them came from Washington State, 60% of them were of white race. And I presented the frequency distributions of those other two populations that we've been comparing to, just to give us a sense of, you know, to put it in context, are these rescreening, people who are coming for rescreening, a representative sample of the people that come to our clinic? Are they a representative sample of the people who test positive in our clinics? And so the Washington State focus, you can see that the percentage who Washington accounts for 80% of the rescreening visits, but only about 50% of the tests is end positive. The reason for that is that Washington has had a big, you know, with Matt, has had a big focus on rescreening and trying to get those clients back in for retesting, and providers are more aware of it, and so that's why they account for such a large percent of these rescreening visits and not of the total visits. But that's not to reflect poorly on any of the other states. With the racial groups, we saw that white clients reflect a slightly larger percentage of the total population, but the positivity is higher among people of racial and ethnic minorities, and so the racial and ethnic minorities make up a slightly larger percentage of the group of CT positives, as well as the group of rescreens, which is basically what we'd expect to see. This is looking at the reproductive health characteristics of the clients. We see that the percentage reporting STD symptoms or exposure is surprisingly actually lower in the rescreening population than I would have expected. It's about equivalent to the total all visits column, whereas the people that tested positive for chlamydia had higher reporting of symptoms, exposure, and risk behaviors. And we'll show this again graphically later. And then the other really important finding is that the positivity rate is 11.5% among the rescreening clients, compared to 5.7% among all clients. So positivity is much higher in those who are rescreened, which is what we've been seeing throughout this presentation. That was family planning clinics. Now this is looking at the STD clinics. I'm not going to go into detail on this table, but the interesting thing was that the racial and state differences that we saw in the family planning clinics, we didn't see in the STD clinics. Everything was pretty consistent across the board here. Looking at the reproductive health profile, What we saw before is even more pronounced in the STD clinics. The percent reporting STD symptoms or exposure is 22% among rescreening clients, and behavioral risk is 30% among rescreening clients, but it's nearly 50% among all clients overall. So we're seeing rescreening clients reporting lower risks than average clients, which really surprised me. And the other thing that's interesting here is that we don't see that difference in positivity between the overall clients in our STD clinics and the rescreening clients. So it's 11.4% overall and 12.2% in rescreens. So that was different from what we've been seeing before. So, sorry, I know a lot of people are not big fans of big tables, so I've graphed a few of these interesting findings. This is looking at that positivity difference we saw between the family planning clinics and the STD clinics. The blue bars represent the percent of people that tested positive for chlamydia in all visits, and the purple bars represent the percent that tested positive for chlamydia at just the rescreening visits. We see that big differential in our family planning clinics, but not in our STD clinics. And again, we saw increased positivity, but we didn't see increased reporting of symptoms or exposure. So we see that the blue bars are all clients, the white bars are rescreening, and the purple bars is that reference group of positive clients. And as we expected, the people who tested positive in the reference group had higher risk or had higher symptoms and exposure, but the people who were rescreened did not. And similarly for risk behaviors. So in summary, we saw that our estimated rescreening rate for chlamydia-positive females was 26% in family planning clinics and STD clinics was 34%. We saw that in family planning clinics, the positivity was twice as high among rescreening clients versus other clients. We did not see this in STD clinics. We saw that rescreening clients were not more likely to report risk behavior symptoms or exposures to STD. In fact, STD rescreening clients were less likely to report any of those behaviors than the average client. The implication of this to us in our IPP program is that if we're going to focus on scaling up rescreening, we should do it among young women in family planning clinics. We expect that this would increase our ability to detect chlamydia cases because that group has higher positivity, and it would also target a group of women who are at elevated risk for the adverse outcomes of chlamydia. We didn't see findings that suggested we should focus on this on STD clinics. And one other thing which I think that Matt touched on really nicely is I like to think of this rescreening process as sort of a pathway. There are different places at which we can intervene. We can intervene at the client level to try to focus on getting them to come back in. We can intervene at the provider or structural level in the clinic to try to get our retesting rates up among those clients who are already in our clinic. But there are different routes of trying to raise that level of retesting. A couple of limitations. As I said, we were analyzing visit-level data, so clients that came in more than once had a heavier weight in that data set than clients who came in only once. We were estimating our rescreening rate, so we were assuming that our rescreening clients were a subset of the CT-positive clients. And it is a limitation, but at the same time, we considered it a benefit because it's a method of doing this in a situation where you don't have unique identifiers. Which is pretty common. And I wanted to bring up one other parting thought on ways of measuring rescreening. We talked a lot about the time frame, but I also think that we need to talk about what, as program people, what do we really care about when we're measuring rescreening? Does it matter if we retested a client regardless of whether we did it intentionally because she came for a rescreening visit? Or, So what we had was a variable that I consider to be an active rescreening variable. It was a client reporting, I came into the clinic because I know I need to be rescreened, and that's what we were measuring. What everybody else has been measuring is it's a passive rescreening rate. It's, you know, what proportion of our clients did we retest, regardless of whether we knew that they were supposed to be retested. And I think this is important because we're dealing, at least in this analysis, we're dealing with women under 25 who are supposed to be screened annually, and, you know, regardless of whether they had a positive or negative test before. And so if we're giving them a 12-month window in which to do their rescreening, theoretically we should be retesting them regardless of whether they had a positive test or not. So what I did really quickly with some more recent data was just to take clients who tested positive in 1 month, April 2008, and give them that 3 to 12 month window and actually do the linking of the visit records, because we had a subset that did have unique IDs, and try to look at that rescreening rate versus the retest rate among people who had a prior negative test. And what we saw was that the retest rate among people who had a prior negative test was 17%. So this, you know, okay, our 25% rescreening rate is low. It could be better, but, you know, we've been priding ourselves on at least getting 25%. But what this is telling me is that 17% of that was done not because we intentionally were trying to rescreen them. So that I wanted to leave you with that question. What is this other group of people who were retested but not intentionally because they were there for rescreening? And do we really, if we're trying to do an intervention to try to increase retesting rates among that population, can we really give ourselves credit for that group? And if we want to do this intervention, maybe we should be using a more active variable like this intentional rescreening variable that we were using, and try to look for an increase in that number. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah. Any questions for Sarah?
It was actually the same 12-month time period for both groups. And so I recognized that, like, there was some overlap there, but I saw very consistent positivity rates over time. And so I kind of figured that whichever 12-month window I'm using, I'm going to have roughly the same number of people who tested positive, and so I wasn't as worried about it, but technically you're right. Exactly, and that's what we wanted to do, was to say, you know, as program people, we need a quick and dirty method to do this, because I really appreciate what Kelly and Joan have done, and I've done it with another data set from another region. It's a lot of work.
I would like to be clear here on the last slide, the whole session, CCD session, will be evaluate re-screening and see how we can increase re-screening rate. The question I have is really, who owns the process? When CCD recommends screening, we see and we know that CCD is recommended, but the average person doesn't know that. Every person is already in the CCD recommendation, even if they are, they don't take my attention. Now, the question becomes, who owns that process? And we struggle in the comment was, we've been defending to tell them what the danger of the new infection is and what the new comeback for the new infection. Again, we don't even get to tell them that.
And I think that's a really important point, and it's something that I didn't spend enough time on because I didn't have enough time, but but that was one of the things I wanted to bring up, is, and it has to do with how we go about measuring rescreening, but do we want to put the onus on the patient to come back, or on the providers to retest in the clinic? You know, our interventions are different depending on who we need, think we need to target, and as Holly's saying, we really need to do both of those things.
And so I think it's right. It goes to your question of who's the owner of this need, and it's both. It's, you know, because if we put all the onus on the client, will the rates aren't going to change dramatically? I would not. Yeah, but if we have, you know, the combination, I think we got a much better shot at increasing the rescreening. Yes.
Right. So once it comes out of people's problem support, the need for some common metrics in terms of what are we going to say is rescreening. And I think the epidemiologic metric doesn't have to be the same as the recommendation. The recommendation is what you think is the best practice for the docs. And the best practice is probably we want to rescreen them in roughly 3 months, but rescreen them when you get a chance. Right? Don't lose an opportunity. But then we have to decide on what, if we're going to follow it over time, what do we want to use. I think I wouldn't go to 365 patients. We have recommended annual screening. Anything after 10 months, and it's arbitrary, I would begin to say, no, that's not the screening now, but you know, I don't know what the right number is, but it's got to be acceptable. 4 weeks to 10 months or something like that. But we should probably come up with something and then try to do the same thing.
But I also think that what we come up with is going to depend on what our objective is. I mean, if we are trying to look at how well we're doing as a program versus trying to get, you know, a real epidemiological estimate of reinfection rates, it may be different.
That's true. I mean, most of the time you think the head of the patient. Right. Most of the time you think the head.
So, David, do you have a comment?
Yeah, I agree with everything you said that trying to come up with definitions would be a good first step. It also, I think, needs to be grounded a bit in knowledge of the program. I'm struck by in Title 10, there is a historical in a situation where they encourage women who are routine unknown clients to come in for an annual exam. And when we looked at Title 10, did it accept it from ITB? Women have an odd notion of what 12 months is. Not really, but you know, due to exigencies, they don't come in 12 months. They come in 10, 11, 13, 14 months.
Oh, so,
having a 3 to 12 month window may be applicable in some programs, but it may have to be re-examined given program levels. So that we don't go to 365. We go to 160 days, we go to 185 days, just under looking at the distribution of how your clients show up at clinic.
So there was another comment, yes.
Yeah, I would hope that we wouldn't forget that woman who comes in because she was a contact to an STD. We treat her and her chlamydia turns out to be negative because I think she's still a high risk and needs to be rescreened as well. Mm-hmm.
So then, when we were talking about metrics, we're talking about dates. The other thing to consider is when you have your data has treatment date, and when your data doesn't have treatment date, it has some form of specimen date, which also might not exactly be specimen date because it might be the lab date, seed date, or something like that. And so, if you're going to say, for instance, gel measure 1 to 6 months from specimen date, is that the same as 1 to 6 months from treatment day? Or do you pack on 30 days? Or is it going to give them that? Or do you look at your individual post area data and see what the treatment percentages are? You know, we also perform this measures around treatment and have a sense of how many times the treatment is occurring. There's also that aspect to consider if we're going to talk about the metrics.
So we've hit our time limit, actually, we're 5 minutes over. So thank you all very much.